Welcome to the CCFR Radio Podcast, your source for news, updates, and stories from the CCFR.
Hey everybody, welcome to episode 83 of the CCFR Radio Podcast. I'm your host, Rod Giltaka. Thanks for joining me again. Today on the podcast, I'm going to have Tracy Wilson come in and give us an update and maybe some insights on our injunction application hearing, which was interesting. I'm also going to have Christine Genereux on, which is a real treat. She is the lady who self-represented and suing the government, just like the CCFR is. And she also participated in the injunction application, which is fantastic. So we're going to have Christine on and just hear about how she prepared. And I know she did some other things as well. It's my understanding, some other legal actions where she was self-represented. And I just think it'd be a really interesting thing for us to talk about. And she did a really great job. And everyone who was on that call on the Zoom meeting that witnessed the hearing thought that she did as well. So it's a real honor. First thing I'd like to do is talk about our sponsor, Vortex, the power of optics. Thanks everyone over at Vortex Canada for continuing to support the podcast. We truly appreciate it. And I'm going to try to make my portion, I'm going to give you a quick update and talk about a couple of things. I'm going to try to make it as quick as I can. So Gun Ban Canada Exposed Episode 5 is coming up probably before the next podcast. It's coming up before the end of the month. I just finished everything and sent it to the editor and the other producer. And it was just a tremendous amount of work. This episode took me probably 2 full weeks to do because I had to do I filmed all of the interviews and stuff. We have, I think, 4 interviews in this episode, and I did them all myself, and plus everything I had to do. And the other reason it was a difficult episode was we are in the fourth. Well, let me put it to you this way. What the episode is why would anyone need a gun? We're answering that question, and I'm going to try to be as brief as possible. So I'm trying to line everything up properly so I can rattle it off here. But basically, what I say in the episode is governments and anti-gun groups benefit from that question. Why would anybody need a gun? And it's very easy to ask, but it takes a long time to answer because firearm ownership is a very complex thing. It's a very unique piece of property that serves multiple roles in the lives of people who own them. So that's kind of a line from the, I wrote all the script, right? So it's in my head. And so it takes a long time to answer. And so it's an advantage because someone says, well, why do you need a gun? You're like, well, it's complicated. Like, see, obviously you don't need one because you can't answer my question. Well, what do I have 6 seconds to answer that? Well, now we had 22 and a half minutes to answer it. So we were able to answer it a lot more completely and hopefully show firearm ownership from the perspective of a few different people through their eyes, right? And hopefully that provides a little bit of a level of understanding. We're never going to win over people that are ideological people that are zealots, but you may win over the undecided, which is the largest group, and that's what we're trying to do. It's like, well, take a look at both sides of the argument before you make a decision, right? Because these are important opinions to have because everyone has a vote, right? So anyway, so we talk about sports shooting, we talk about hunting, we talk about, you know, we hear from people, like I said, that own guns. But the last block, the last segment, you could call it, right, block 4, is the most difficult one because I address self-defense with firearms in Canada. Very sensitive topic. And rest assured that when people see it, especially the spin docs and their minions, right, their heads are going to blow up, right? There'll just be, of course, their whole strategy is outrage, right, is incredulity. Like, oh my God, I can't believe it. You know, like, it's funny because the left side, the liberal side, and it's not even real liberals, right? They're leftists. I'm a liberal. But these people, these leftists, their whole strategy is just outrage. And basically it's like they're panicking. They're jumping up and down, waving their arms, screaming and yelling, crying. There's this totally falling apart. And they're looking around, hoping that other people are going to fall apart too. Like, that's their whole strategy. And that's where this faux outrage comes. And you know, the thing is, the outrage takes place in conversations that should just be reasonable conversations, you know, spoken in a reasonable manner with reasonable people, right? Like, you know, self-defense a thing? You can't. Of course it's a thing. Are you obligated? Is the state obligating you to just die at the hands of criminals? And in some ways, yes, because the process is the punishment in Canada. They'll run you through the process. But ultimately, you have a right not to be assaulted, raped, or murdered. Like, I think you do. I think a lot of people agree with me. I think a small group of people think that you don't have that right. And if the state can't save you, well, you're a victim. Too bad. And you actually just become something that they can use to further that bad situation in Canada, right? Because everyone that's murdered or assaulted becomes a cautionary tale. Well, we need more gun control. We need to be weaker. We need to be less ability. We should have less ability to protect ourselves, right? And it's funny. It works both ways for them, right? It's heads I win, tails you lose. So anyway, I know that was a kind of a long way to talk about it, but I had this clip that I put in. I'm going to show it to you right now. And you know what? We'll analyze it in a second. Check it out.
We didn't have a Wild West. We don't have a constitutional right to bear arms in Canada. The Americans do. I think the Prime Minister got it kind of confused. And for a Prime Minister of Canada to suggest that we have firearms to protect ourselves from our fellow citizens was unbelievable. We have always, as a culture, accepted the fact that we have an ability to have firearms legally for hunting, for target practice, for collecting, but never so that we can shoot our fellow citizens who may knock on the door or want to come in unwelcome. And in fact, the federal government has a bill now before Parliament called the Common Sense Gun Licensing Act, or Firearm Licensing Act, and it is loosening up the rules for when people with pistols can carry them and where.
If some people misunderstand.
Now, I just find that completely amazing. What an amazing clip. And of course, it's got a bunch of lies in there. So the setup for that, I guess I didn't set it up before I played it, but basically in 2015, Stephen Harper said, and I got to paraphrase because I don't have the quote with me. It's in the episode though. He said, my wife's from a rural area and guns weren't just for the farm. They were also for a sense of security when you're away from police assistance. I think that's actually pretty close to the quote. As a matter of fact, because I think I said that 30 times yesterday as I was recording the monologue stuff, right? But anyway, he said that, and people like Craig Oliver and the other Bob see them all like, oh yeah, this is just, oh, it's insane. You know, like the fact that the idea that you'd protect yourself if someone's going to rape, assault, or murder you is just ridiculous. You know, if you can't fight, if a woman that's 5 foot tall and 90 pounds can't fight off a 225 pound drug addict as he's trying to rape or murder or kill her, you know, and she reaches for a gun, I couldn't think of anything more outrageous. Like, I don't know what's gone wrong with people in Canada. And I think it's taken decades to get people to this point where they reject, they don't know what's real and what isn't anymore. But anyway, that's a really great clip. So not only is this elitist Craig Oliver, like one of the worst people as far as I'm concerned, because the damage isn't just that he's ignorant. The damage is that his outrage spreads to other people because it's via the news, right? Via television. And television, despite how much that they pulled the mask off and people can see what it's all about there, there's a lot of people still very heavily influenced when they see something on television. On top of that, he lies, flat out lies. And he's referring to Bill C-42, the Common Sense Firearms Licensing Act, back in 2015. And he says, oh, the conservatives are loosening up regulations on where people can carry pistols, how people can carry pistols and where. And nothing, like, it's a flat out lie. And I mean, if you guys don't know the truth is that Bill C-42 changed the regulations when it came to whether or not you have to carry the paper ATT with you, the authorization of transport, which is an authorization, I guess you could call it, right? As the name suggests, but basically you need an authorization to take your restricted firearm. So a handgun unloaded, trigger lock, right? Or secure locking device on the firearm in a locked case. Driving to and from the range in the most reasonably direct route in the circumstances is how the regulation is worded. But you need a piece of paper with you or you're a criminal, which was the ATT, was a physical piece, and to drive back and forth to the range. And the change in Bill C-42 was the ATT still exists. All the conditions of the ATT still exists. but you don't have to carry the physical piece of paper with you. That was the change. Okay, so he says carrying pistols, there is no concealed carry in Canada, you know, like they have in the United States. Like there is, it's something called an authorization to carry, ATC. But ATCs, it's my understanding that only two people in the entire country have an ATC. So certainly if anybody would qualify for them as a civilian, I would. I get threats every day. My competency level, not so much now because I'm getting old and slow and I haven't shot a handgun in a year. But in 2015, I was probably more competent than 90% of the police officers in the country to carry a firearm, to carry a handgun, right? I wouldn't have a prayer of getting one. So very, very few people have them. Some people have them for wilderness carry if they're a logger or run a trap line so that there's a larger number there. But no one has a pistol for self-defense sitting at the bar somewhere in Canada. Like, and when I say no one, I mean like only a handful of people in the entire country. You know, they are not generally available and they're not given out, that's for sure. So, and Bill C-42 had nothing to do with ATCs. So the problem is that this guy is on there telling lies to people. And he's not telling lies to people because like, I want to confuse people about the regulation. He's trying to get them outraged. He's trying to get everybody to be running around like the conservatives are handing out handguns to people and making it easy for them to carry them around in, you know, and if you remember, I know I'm rambling, but it's just interesting, right? If like if you ever really sit down and look at the truth of what's gone on, it's so different than what people think it is, right? And this is all easy to prove. But even the liberals came out with a little, if you remember that political meme thing, that the conservatives are letting people have like machine guns at ice rinks and at the Canadian Tire or the grocery store or whatever, right? And they show like, you know, MP5s or I forget what are AR-15s. And it's like, well, no, you couldn't have them there in the first place and you can't have them now even after Bill C-42 passed. So anyway, that's the kind of stuff that we have to deal with all the time. And it's like, it's pure fraud. And again, you know, for people like for Craig Oliver, there's no consequences whatsoever. In fact, for me just sitting here telling you that that's not true and showing you my paper ATT and all the rest of that stuff, I could show you all that stuff. But still, they would try to make, you know, paint us as the bad guys. It's just very interesting and it's very unfortunate because it tears us apart. It's incredibly divisive and it just tears us apart. And as you can see, I got to wrap this up, right? Because I've been talking too long as it is. But as you can see, as you deal with people in your day-to-day lives in Canada, you can see people are so confused. They don't know what to believe. They don't know who to believe. They think, for instance, they can't defend themselves. If someone wants to kill them, they just got to take a knee and die. You know, that is not within their rights. You know, they think everyone's lying to them. Most people are. And it's a really sad state of affairs. And how we got to this point is stuff like what you just saw. Flat out lies being broadcast as truth, no one ever making a correction. And that's out there. And then you have people like the spin docs that will pick something like that up and regurgitate it. It's like, oh no, now even the doctor said it's true. They've made so many mistakes and said so many untrue things. It's ridiculous. I could go on, I could do a podcast just outlining and demonstrating from their Twitter feed alone, all of the things that they've said that's flat out false, patently false. But you know, that's our landscape and it's really difficult. But you know, it's strangely enough, again, we find ourselves as the gun lobby, or even me as an individual, and find myself, it's like, well, wait a second, what, it's up to me to tell people what's true and what's not? Like me, you know, I'm nobody, right? To be the go-to person to tell people what's real or what's not, right? But you know, and the other people are falling down on their responsibilities. Doctors should have a responsibility to spread accurate information. There should be consequences to that. In fact, if you remember, we tried to get the CPSO, the College of Physicians and Surgeons of Ontario, to say no, Najma Ahmed, you cannot say misleading things. You cannot represent yourself as an expert if you're just in firearms and firearm policy. If you're a physician, you're an expert in medicine, right? They're two different things. But again, right, it was all political and they're like, nope, this is great. We're experts in everything, right? You know, there isn't a topic that a medical doctor isn't an expert in, and that's what you need to know. And that was the message, I guess, that they sent out to Canadians. So anyway, it's a strange place we find ourselves in. Okay. I'm going to quit talking now. It's been too long because we have guests that are a lot more interesting than I am coming up. So let's whip over and talk to Tracy Wilson. All right. On the Skype, I've got Wilson. Wilson.
Giltaka.
Okay.
Hey, buddy.
Well, it's good. There's a variation every time. It's a little weird, but it's good.
Well, we have to keep it interesting, right? People are watching now, not just listening. So
I, you know what, it's the whole video thing still bothers me because I keep just wanting to talk to the screen because nobody could see me normally. So I'm just looking down here, but keep forgetting I got to look at the camera as if there's somebody in the camera.
We will get used to it. And as we go along, things will get better and more interesting, but yeah, it's good. It's good.
Yeah. All right. We've got a bunch of stuff to talk about. What should we start with? I'm like, has anything been going on at all? Or is it just like nothing as usual at the CCFR?
No, you know, it's just quiet at the CCFR. There's literally not been a quiet minute in 5 years. However, things have been crazy around here. First thing I want to talk about is Justin Trudeau, the Prime Minister of Canada, has issued a new set of mandate letters for his ministers. So, of course, Minister Bill Blair got a new mandate letter. It's very long. There's a lot going on. He has a lot under his purview. What's interesting is I always kind of skip through all the bulletin points and get to where he talks about different gun control measures. And basically it just said, you know, support the Department of Justice in their gun control mandate. And that's it. So there was nothing new. I have talked to a couple of the opposition members today about what they think that means. Does it mean there's nothing new on the horizon? Does it mean that maybe they are a little, you know, shy of working on this file right now? Does it mean they're actually doing work on other more important matters that would benefit Canadians' public safety? And, you know,
could imagine.
Imagine, right?
they got nothing else going on, right?
The feeling is they just don't want to give it away because we're beating them up so hard, right? So, yeah. We'll see what happens with that, but I did find it interesting that it was just a very vague sort of work on the mandate type statement and no particular measures mentioned. And that's important. Those kinds of things are usually flags or signals on how motivated the government is to implement new gun control measures. And I think right now they've got their hands full between us and COVID and all the other terrible things going on in the world. I think they've got enough to deal with. So,
yeah, hopefully.
Interesting. Hopefully.
Yeah.
That'd be cool to work on crime and stuff.
Wouldn't that be something?
Yeah. I don't know. I think it'd be interesting if they, you know, maybe address the opiate crisis or, you know, all of the other things going on, crime and violence in Toronto, illicit weapons smuggling. There's a lot of things they could talk about other than attacking legal sport shooters and hunters, but we'll have to wait and see.
All right. And then what else? That was it? Just the mandate letters? There's got to be something else going on in our community and that links our community and the CCFR. And there's got to be something. I just can't remember what it is.
Oh, right. There was an injunction hearing for a massive court case.
Right. Yeah.
So Monday, it was interesting that I'm going to start off with giving a shout out to our entire community because Associate Chief Justice Jocelyn Gagne, who is the judge assigned to our case, confirmed that the CCFR and Friends versus Canada injunction hearing is the highest attended judicial process in the history of the federal court. And that's without letting everyone in. If you remember, we were given the link to register where 100 or 1,000 people could participate in witnessing this historic injunction being heard. Now, I think 2,300 or 2,700 people registered for it. And of course, only 1,000 at a time could get in. So as we lost some people, new people were in the waiting to get in. This thing went on all day long and never got under 1,000 people. So it was jam-packed. After the hearing was over, and, you know, they were pretty impressed with the attendance and the interest by Canadians in this case. The court's communication people contacted the CCFR and said that their account actually enables up to 10,000 people to witness these hearings. So going forward, they would increase the viewership for us so that we could accommodate more people. So I think that speaks to the, you know, the will to be transparent by the courts, as well as the, you know, the understanding of how important this issue is to so many Canadians that they're going to open it wide up. Like 10,000 people watching a court hearing is pretty incredible. They were blown away by 1,000, and we had a waiting room full all day long that couldn't get in. So,
yeah, I got booted out once, and I had to try. I lost my seat right away, and I was like, oh, I'm never going to get back in. So I kept trying and trying and trying and trying. And I never told you that, but I was able to get back in. The whole country is all united behind gun control. Cause I mean, think of all the gun control people that showed up there. I don't think any did. Anyway, I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong.
I think one of the gun control people must have shown up because there was some illicit screenshots that were posted on social media that were brought to the judge's attention.
Yeah.
As of course, recording or, screenshotting federal court hearings is totally prohibited, but in any event, yeah.
Yeah.
There was a lot of people interested in this case, and you're totally right, Rod. The anti-gun side always says that the majority of Canadians support more gun control and support, you know, the forced confiscation of our firearms and all this stuff. Yet, you know, we hold rallies in the middle of a global pandemic and 5,000 people show up. We get an invite to get into a court hearing and it's jam-packed all day long. We circulate a petition and 250,000 people sign it. Yet you look at the work that they do and they're lucky to get 100 views or 50 likes. So I don't know. I tend to think that maybe they're not quite as supported as they pretend they are.
Yeah. And that's actually not a joke. I was compiling a little bit of information and I was thinking of talking about it, you know, like as a topic in a podcast. And then I was like, you know what? The only oxygen that these guys get, like the Spin Docs or anybody, is when we talk about them. That's why their guy watches all of our podcasts because they have no content, right? So, yeah, it was funny. I was looking through their their Twitter feed, and you know, it's like half of their followers are gun people. Just looking at what kind of ridiculousness they're saying, and there was this video. I want to make a point of this. Is there this video with Philip Berger, right? Order of Canada recipient. Oh, he's a hero, right? You know, and everything. It's like, there's a video from their National Day of Action. It's like, watch Philip Berger, you know, take on the gun lobby bullies, right? And it was like, I looked, it had been up for like 2 months, right? I look, it was 8 views. And I'm like, how do you get 8 views? Like, was it on private the whole time? And just when I locked it, you know, looked at it, it was, and then I looked again, I think, I don't know, a couple days ago or something. I'm like, oh, I should probably make fun of them for that. And it's up to 30 views. It was like 29 views or something. So I was probably the 30th, right? And remember, right, two of those views are me looking at how bad they're doing.
Stop viewing it over and over, Gil Sackett.
Exactly. It was my problem. Anyway.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, it's just a weird place that we find ourselves in where we are the target of all this advocacy. Imagine if all these people were as focused on reducing crime and violence as they were in reducing gun ownership. You know, we'd probably have a safer, better Canada for everyone. So,
yeah, for sure.
Really,
for sure.
But, real fun.
But the hearing was a lot of fun. And, you know, it's, you know, people keep asking, no matter how many times we say it. So there's actually two things I think we should make mention of while we're on the topic is, number one, if you get into one of these hearings, you cannot even screenshot it. It's a federal crime, is my understanding. And the judge, yes. We don't need the judge angry at us, right? So she did make mention of it once that someone did that. Pauli Saint-Sauvier did it and they screenshot it and they posted it expressly against the judge's instructions. You know, I'm not going to jump all over them all day long for it because that's an easy mistake to make, to be honest. Make sure everybody knows next time, because we're in our community, right? We're used to memes and screenshotting and posting all this stuff and fighting all the time. For those people, that's not cool.
No. And this is a big deal. Another cool thing I want to mention, this is just a little fun fact about the popularity of this, is on the day of the injunction, I was using hashtag CCFR injunction on Twitter, and other people were picking up on that. And it was actually trending in the topics for not just Canadian politics, but Canada trends. We were trending in 13th place. So Yeah, we were trending above Keystone XL.
Very interesting.
And that's a pretty big deal to a lot of people. So, yeah, I find those little tidbits interesting, you know, considering that the majority of Canadians apparently support the forced confiscation of our legally acquired firearms.
Yeah,
so, yeah. Yeah, I'm just going to keep saying just like that.
Right, and the other thing, because I kind of forgot, but it's been a long day. Usually I do these early on in the day when I have a reasonably fresh brain, which is not even great at that point either, but...
what are you saying?
The other thing is people always ask what our chances are. And even in the hearing, they made mention of getting an injunction or injunctive relief against legislation is really, really difficult. It's very rare to succeed in something mm-hmm. like that. But we have a good case. I think a lot of people agree that our main case is actually pretty solid. Again, it's a crapshoot. But, you know, don't hold your breath. But it's a fight that needed to be fought. And it's a very small group of people that decide to go all the way and go after the injunction. But
that's right.
You know, we'll see.
You know, it's a team of six different cases fighting to have the OIC overturned to begin with. But there's only three teams that worked on this injunction. So I think that's important. And you're right. The burden of proof or justification for an injunction is considerably higher than for the main case. And a loss at the injunction stage doesn't really have a lot of bearing on the main case itself. It doesn't mean that it's over, but not trying wasn't an option for us or any of the other teams that partnered up with us. So, you know, we promised gun owners we would leave no stone unturned nor avenue unexplored, and we meant it. So, yeah, we got to try, right? Not fighting is not an option.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, anything else you want to mention quick? Because we've got to save some time for Christine.
No, that's about it. I think give the time to Christine because she deserves it and you're in for a real treat.
That sounds awesome. All right. Well, thanks for coming on and we will see you next time.
Thanks, Rod.
All right. On the Skype, I've got Christine Genereux. She is a self-represented individual for the action against the government for the gun ban. And yeah, we're happy to have her here. Hey, Christine.
Hey, Rod. How are you?
I'm all right. Thanks for asking. How about you?
I'm good.
Are you still kind of vibrating from the whole court hearing?
I'm feeling positive. I think it went really well, and I think our side presented the facts and arguments in a really strong and coherent manner. I don't want to be too optimistic, but I felt ultimately that gun owners have won the day at the injunction.
Well, that's very optimistic, and I hope that you're right. I, on the other hand, am quite pessimistic because I really have very little trust for the system. Call me jaded. But, you know, a lot of people were talking about how well you did and how inspiring it is as you and an individual decides, okay, well, you know what? I'll take on the country of Canada myself. Is this the first time that you've done something like this before?
At this level, yes, but I did bring one charter challenge previously when I was working down in the Byward Market. And, you know, unfortunately, I am a smoker, so I was told that my cigarette smoking outdoors was harming other people. And having a background in science, I didn't really believe that they had data to prove that. I don't smoke in my house because it is provable indoors that it's measurable. It can be dangerous to people and it makes the walls all yellow. But outdoors, I think that's where I drew the line. So I wondered why some people who wanted to control me thought that their right to not see me smoke or smell my cigarette smoke was more important than my right to smoke. And so I launched a charter challenge about that, and I purposefully got fines and went to the court and fought it on constitutional grounds that I believe the charter says that all Canadians have the right to do whatever they want, as long as it's not illegal and it doesn't do substantial harm to public health and demonstrable harm, then we have our rights. And I got a petition going. I had like 5,000 signatures. I was on CFRA on the Ron Corbett show a couple of times talking about the issues. And ultimately, several people had paid the fines, but I refused on constitutional grounds. And you could call it a small win. I was still able to smoke on my stand because they couldn't demonstrate that it was a danger to public health. They just kept dismissing me. They tried to tell me that my ticket didn't exist. And when I showed them the hard copy and I asked them, what is this? Here's the date. Three times I went to court. The first time they told me I had no court dates, so I got a printout. The second time I went and I was ready to face the judge, I had a presentation about the scientific data and the officer didn't show up. And the third time I was told again that I had no ticket. They didn't want me to fight it. So I was allowed to continue my smoking outside. But I saw a sort of academic dishonesty happening there where the chief officer of public health, Ezra Levy, I believe his name was, he was trying to say that using kind of weasel words that outdoor smoking could be as harmful as indoor smoking. So I spent my time, I read their 2,000-3,000 pages of scientific reports. And in fact, I found out that that was a type of fraud they were committing by misinterpreting those scientific reports. Those reports were inconclusive. They were done by universities using side pack monitors, and they were using made up equations that proved that if somebody was 1 foot away from the tail of a lighted cigarette for 90 minutes a day and the wind never changed and that person inhaled all that cigarette smoke for 90 minutes a day, that they could possibly be 1 microgram over the US EPA's ambient air quality standards. Yet their margin of error was over 5 micrograms. So in basically scientific speak, their data meant nothing except that I'm right and that it wasn't a danger. So that was the backstory there.
No, the academic dishonesty, where have you heard that before, right?
Right.
Yeah, we're suffering severely from that right now. So, I mean, how much preparation did it take? I mean, you've been through this before, I think, at a different level.
Yeah.
And you won, by the way. And how much prep did it take to do what you did on Monday?
Well, for 8.5 months, I've been eating, sleeping, and breathing this case. Some days I typically devote all my free time to it, weekends, evenings, early mornings. It's been a lot of work, but it's not really a choice for me. It's something that I think I have to do because I know it's the right thing to do. And I mean, yeah, it's a lot of work, but it's worth it.
Yeah. Well, I think a lot of people, you know, on social media or that you interact with in your life, you know, I think most people don't understand how much work it is to do anything remarkable, right? It should just happen for you, right? So it's, no, you did a really great job. And I think people were quite impressed. So if we win the injunction, that's good news. Do you have a gun that you're prevented from shooting right now?
Yeah, my Ruger Mini 14, my small game getter.
Small game getter. That's not what Paul Desensivier calls it.
Well, you know, I mean, I think this type of argument is childish and it's ridiculous. And I mean, we're not going to let one bad apple spoil the bunch. If, for example, you know, that evil Colonel Russ Williams, the criminal there, like, does he represent our military now? Are colonels all bad because one colonel was bad? I don't subscribe to that type of argument. And my firearm is never possessed for mass murder. It's not possessed for homicide. It's not a symbol of violence. And I mean, I just don't accept that. So I'm really excited. I feel that the interests of justice dictate that we should get some relief. I know injunctions are notoriously hard to achieve. They're not granted often except for in exceptional circumstances, but I think that this is one.
Well, I tend to agree, and I hope you're right. It's been a lot of work and a lot of expense. We sent a pretty big team there. Well, I mean, the big team was assembled for our main case. And we thought, well, we should do an injunction anyway. Why make two trips? But yeah, I hope you're right. I hope you're right. There's a lot of people out there that are deprived of their property and I find the whole thing quite, insulting and patronizing. And especially when, you know, their argument is very fallacious. And if you disagree with them, that you're all kinds of ists, right? And it's just,
well,
yeah, it's terrible.
Yeah.
Sorry, did I cut you off?
Oh, no. It's all they have is name calling because they don't have facts or truth or right on their side. So unfortunately, you know, I never intended to bring an injunction. I was having enough work put on me with the hearing on the merits and everything. But I considered both parties' positions about the injunction, and I still hadn't made up my mind, actually. And I went up to the cottage with my friends for a weekend, and we had some guests in the summer. And I still hadn't made up my mind about an injunction, and we were having some drinks around the bonfire, and a friend of a friend who I had been very active in trying to convince him to get his pal finally, he looked at me and he said, "What's the point? Why would I bother if the government's just going to take it from me and maybe without compensation? Why bother?" And I told him, that is the point. And so that's when I decided right then and there that I would bring the injunction, because I have no other option and I believe it's the right thing to do.
Well, what's cool about that is it's one thing to get online and complain and to point fingers at other people saying, "Well, what are you guys doing? You know, tell me what you've done to," and it's like, "Oh no, I'm going to do something." And that's so rare and that's why it's so inspiring, right? It's, if you want to stop something from happening or you want something to happen, you got to get up and you got to do it yourself. And it's always a lot of work. That's why very few people ever do it. So hats off to you and excellent job.
You guys too. I mean, everybody who is bringing the fight so far, and, you know, all the members of the Canadian Gun Nuts Forum and everybody who's been so supportive to all the causes, whether it's been money, time, getting the word out there, you know, the ad campaign, like all of the people that are fighting inspire me and they give me courage. And I hope that I can speak for the majority of gun owners and just show the court what type of irreparable harm that we actually are suffering. Because for me, it has nothing to do with money. Of course, we can't keep affording to have our property seized. And that's what it's really about for me, is I saw the truth and I saw that, as I said in my presentation, the pith and substance of this regulation is not to ban some guns because they're more dangerous or more deadly, but I believe it is to eventually ban all guns. And I think that we saw that was demonstrated at the hearing when the government counsel said, if we define these terms, military assault rifle variant, then people will just be able to buy and manufacture firearms that don't fit that definition, and they can get through it and get some other firearms. And some of the council, I think, then noticed and realized that in reality, the facts and common sense tell us that this is not for the purpose of public safety. This is a sort of discrimination that's being done to us. And the change clause, as your council calls it, proves that they never intend us to replace nor buy replacements for these other firearms. They want to threaten us and harass us into a way of not buying any more replacement firearms out of fear that they'll be seized. And I will be very surprised if there's a buyback program.
Wow. Yeah. Well, you know, I think there was a few things about the hearing that I found interesting, that things came to life. So the FRT, right? The FRT I think it should have been shocking. I'm sure you were shocked too, right? When they're like, "Well, how do you find out if you get arrested, you get charged with a criminal offense, you spend $60,000 on a lawyer, and if you don't go to jail, you know the FRT was wrong. That's how we prove whether or not the FRT is law." And, you know, I, again, I'm quite pessimistic. I've been doing this probably 2 years too long. But the judge seemed, which was nice, which gave me a little bit of hope. The judge was like, "Wait a second, what?" And so maybe there's someone in this country in a position of power that says, you know what, it's not okay to do wrong things anymore. And then the other thing that was actually quite shocking was the government's position, like, "Oh yeah, we got to keep it loosey goosey. We got to keep it super subjective because we don't want to actually be accountable for anything we do. We want it just to be like, we want to be untouchable." Like, was that shocking to you?
That is a little disturbing. I wasn't shocked about the FRT not being law. I'm much more comfortable than ever now. And I'm not a lawyer, but I have pretty good English reading and listening comprehension. And to me, what the judge was saying in layman's terms, is that any one of the unnamed variants that are not listed in the regulation are not prohibited. And we have been wondering about that. And, you know, that was not shocking to me. But yes, it is a little bit shocking to me that the government is saying, "Hey, it doesn't matter the truth of their contents. You don't have to believe us or not believe us or question our wisdom. We're the government. We're allowed to do this, you know." And the fact that they're admitting that the term variant was left purposefully vague. And my evidence and your evidence does show that the Standing Joint Committee on the Scrutiny of Regulations, as well as a private member's bill, was they were notified that they tried to address this severely lacking, and I don't know the term for it, but it is not legal. It is not legal to have criminal offenses that are so ill-defined that it creates vagueness and uncertainty in what is an offense. So this is not right. And we know that, and the Standing Joint Committee knows it, and that's why there is a private member's bill tabled about it. But the internal documents show that the government declined to define it, even though they knew that it had precipitated legal trouble in the past.
Well, and
it's concerning.
Yeah, of course. And the gall. And the, you know, these guys, the government's legal team weren't the first to ever say this, but you know, and Bill Blair has said this, and I think Justin Trudeau said it too. You know, well, just buy one of the guns that aren't currently banned, and it's like, hey man, I did, and before it actually got to me, it was banned. So you know, and they think that's funny. Like they think this is all a big joke. It's a big joke to them. They think that if one of us gets plucked out of the forest somewhere, sitting there plinking, shooting pots and pans or whatever, and we go to jail and our lives are destroyed and my career is destroyed or your career and our family's torn apart. And like that's funny to them. And I know I'm painting kind of a dark picture, but I don't know how you can go through, like really understand all of the issues that we have to understand and not come to that conclusion. This is a joke to them, and it's got to stop, right?
These are dark times, and it does kind of feel like a running joke. And I don't know when I went to sleep in this country and woke up and found that my rights were removed, but I don't accept it. And we're taking the only recourse that we can. It does feel like we are a big joke to them, but the joke to me is that they are more likely to commit a firearms homicide than we are.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting. Christine, how do we end this off on a positive? Because it got pretty dark pretty fast.
Actually, I have something that we can end off on a positive note. And I believe, I can be corrected if I'm wrong, but I believe that this is one of the only cases to argue home the fact that firearms ownership and possession, and I assert of modern firearms, not just muskets and muzzleloaders, okay, is our culture. And it's our birthright and it's our heritage and it is our right. It's written into the criminal code. Hunting and sport shooting, as I said in my oral presentation, it is a proud Canadian history. And here I have my Exhibit B. I hope you can see this. I'll try to bring it as close as possible. This is my Exhibit B. And this is actually a picture of my great-grandfather at his cabin in Algonquin Park with his rifles and his moose head and everything back in the 1890s. And that proves that Canadian gun culture is my culture. And the Canada's Multiculturalism Act says that the government must promote, enhance, and, you know, champion our cultures and not let them be destroyed.
Yeah, well, they're doing the best they can. And certainly the Minister of Heritage is right in there, doing the best that they can to destroy our culture. And it's up to us to defend it, I guess.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, great job. Everyone thinks you did a fantastic job. I certainly do. And just thanks for standing up for gun owners. I mean, people got to do it, and you've done just a fantastic job of it.
No worries. I'm happy to.
Awesome. Thanks for coming on, Christine.
All right. No worries.
All right, everybody. That's going to do it for episode 83 of the CCFR Radio Podcast. Thanks, Tracy Wilson and Christine, for coming on. Really appreciate it. Christine is an inspiration, I think, to everybody for taking the time and effort to fight the government when they do bad things to good people. So that was really interesting. As you know, the CCFR has taken on a huge commitment financially for this court case. It's very expensive. It's very stressful to do it because we still got a bit to pay for before it makes its way all the way to the Supreme Court. Probably it's where it's going. So if you want to become a member or donate, that would be much appreciated. If you want to make a recurring donation, you can go to firearmrights.ca and do that. That's actually even better than a one-time donation, as a smaller recurring donation. So if you want to donate 5, 10, 15, 20 bucks a month or whatever works for you in these hard times, it is much appreciated. And those donations, we don't have to pay insurance on those donations. and they come every month so we can count on them. Those are really important, even if they're a small amount. So consider doing that. And if you do, we greatly appreciate it. Anyway, don't forget to share this podcast. Thanks for watching, and we'll see you next time.
This is another episode of the CCFR Radio Podcast. Remember, if you don't stand up for your own ability to own and use firearms, who will? Join the CCFR or donate right now at www.firearmrights.ca.